Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we are going to be focusing a bit more on the commodities, but from a different angle. Not so much on the fundamentals, more from the trading side of things. And then in the back half of this first hour, switching focus more to still in the commodities, but more in the energy sector, looking big picture and diving down into some of the individual stocks. To kick off this show, we are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lyons Share Pro website. Now, Dana, I want to start off by going around the horn on a number of different commodities here, because broadly, commodities are still doing well. The markets are also doing well. There are opportunities around these markets, but our audience likes the commodities and they really like the precious metals. So let's start there. As we're recording this later in the day on Thursday, it's a good day for gold. Gold is up about $21, trading above $2,300, right about $2,340. Seems to have put in some sort of a floor here around $2,300, at least for this week, let's call it. Any weakness has seemed to be bought. And yes, it's a bit more of a sideways trading action here off of some of the highs from early April, but overall, Dana, in terms of the charts, what stands out to you for gold?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Gold, you know, we've been very positive about the prospects for gold for some time. It had the big rally several years ago. It's consolidated, pretty much gone sideways for the last 4 years, forming kind of a cup and handle going back to the highs in 2011, and as they say, the bigger the base, the higher the space above once it does break out. So we think there's, you know, maybe this move is just getting started and there's plenty of room to go to the upside. So we've been very bullish on the price of gold as well as the rest of the precious metals complex, including silver. Copper is acting well, not only the metals, but the equities, the miners themselves, also looking very positive here. And I've had a nice spike, consolidated those spikes over the last couple months or so, and maybe storing some fuel and getting ready for that next wave up. So still very positive on the complex in general.
Well, Dane, I know that you like to look at every asset class on their own accord without commingling, and that the commodity stocks don't always have to make the same journey that the commodities themselves make. But a lot of individual investors look at, hey, if gold's going up, my gold stock should be going up. If silver's going up, my silver stock should be going up. And same with the rest of the complex. Lately, we've had a couple technicians note that the mining stocks have actually held up better than the metals as they pulled back. Do you put any credence on that? Any kind of divergence where the equities start doing, they outperform the underlying metals?
We have in the past done some work on that, just some cursory work, and have concluded pretty much along the same lines that generally in the short term, when you have the miners outperforming the metals, that has been more of a risk-on environment for the precious metals complex. So I don't have enough evidence to make a develop a whole trading strategy on it necessarily, but I have anecdotally noticed the same. So I would say, anytime you do see the miners joining or even leading a move like that, I would say I would tend toward it being more bullish than contrarian. So the fact that the miners have held up extremely well following the most recent spike into, you know, April, I think that's a very positive sign going forward.
Dana, can I get you to look at the GDXJ chart, but in a way of comparing a shorter term chart that definitely looks bullish? You look at a daily chart and this market has been uptrending very nicely and has actually had some breakouts. You look at a weekly chart, this one also shows a nice breakout here, but you go to the monthly chart and even back decade plus, we can see a big divergence here where GDXJ still well off of its highs, also a fair bit off of its highs from 2020, but it's also well off of its lows from 2015, 2016 region. How do you segregate the different time frames of these charts?
Right. You do have to have, you know, a durational perspective when you're looking at these charts. You know, if the recent move had been a spike to all-time highs, like in the price of gold, then I think it's both short-term bullish and long-term, obviously, very bullish. It opens up the entire upside on the chart. There's no resistance there. In this case, the short-term move has been nice. We did, on a constructive note, did finally hit a higher high in the GDXJ, as well as some of the other miners ETFs. But as you mentioned, going back, you know, several years, still hitting lower highs versus those highs in 22 and 2020, certainly. So there is resistance on the chart. The path higher might not be as smooth for the miners as it is for gold, but it depends how they react. If gold does continue to move higher, and the miners charts or the miners ETFs slice right through directly through all that resistance in one fell swoop, I mean, that's an extremely bullish message right there. On the other hand, if it just stair steps its way up higher, it's good that we're hitting higher highs, but it's still more or less prone to pauses or, you know, those obstacles along the way, considering we've got about 4 years of higher highs and resistance on the way up. So I would say jury is still out in the longer term, but in the short term, at least, like I mentioned, at least we have higher highs on the chart now in terms of GDXJ. And if you look at what we've talked about in the past, even copper miners or even the silver miners, junior silver miners, those have been leading even the gold miners of late and look poised for a more significant breakouts and multi-year highs right here. So we do have exposure there in addition to the gold miners, as they're showing a little bit of relative strength versus the gold miners.
Well, let's dig into that idea, Dana. Let's shift from the yellow metal over to the red metal. I mean, copper has been on quite a tear recently. It still hasn't eclipsed the highs that it saw back in 2022 during the Ukraine war breakout, but it's been very strong. And when you look at the copper stocks and something like COPEX, COPX, they've just been blazing higher and higher. A lot of people are worried it may be getting kind of tired here from a technical basis. Do you think it could just keep plowing higher, or does it need to rest?
In terms of copper miners, I think it's got tremendous potential here. It did have a nice run over the last couple months, right up to the highs that we saw in 2021, 2022. So no surprise, nor is it unhealthy for it to rest for a little bit, and it has been ping-ponging around here for the last month or so. Would not be unhealthy or unconstructive for it to digest for a little bit longer, even a couple months or so. But once we do break out here, I mean, you're looking at, we don't have any price history in that area, say above 50, until you got to go back to like 2011. So I mean, there is blue skies above once we do have a decisive breakout above this 48, 49 area. So yes, I'd say, put another way, we've been basically consolidating since 2021. A little bit more short-term consolidation would be healthy, and then a breakout would be much more apt to be sustainable considering the recent consolidation. So I think there's tremendous potential in that chart.
You know, one other thing that stands out to me in that COPEX chart that we don't have a historical reference for is just how high of volume we've seen in the last couple months. Volume's just skyrocketed on some strong up moves. We don't talk volume too much, Dana, but what does this tell you when you see a breakout like that and volume following along to levels we have never seen in something like COPEX?
Yeah, we've talked about volume a little bit in the past. We don't put a ton of credence or a ton of thought into volume unless we see unusual behavior. Typically, you're seeing you see the more volume on the way down and then the most volume at lows, unless you're talking about a long run and then you see a spike up in volume right at the top. Generally, you're seeing higher volume on down moves as they're more emotional type of moves. The fact that we've seen really good volume on the recent rally, I guess, over the last couple months, I think that's bit of an outlier type of stat that we like to look at, and that's or a contrarian type of behavior, which to us would tend to put more ammunition into the bullish camp itself, considering that you generally don't see that rising volume in up moves until you get to maybe, you know, a blow up type of a top, and I certainly don't think we're there yet. So the fact that we've got that much money going into this move, the short-term move on the way up, I think is probably another bullish sign.
Well, Dana, let's now shift from a red metal back to a different yellow metal, uranium, yellow cake. The uranium stocks have been through a kind of a roller coaster year where they were up, they were down, they're up, they're down. But a lot of technicians are pointing to what they see as somewhat of a cup and handle on the daily chart. I don't think it's an exact cup and handle pattern, but it's that same kind of consolidation where it's dipped down and then it's made a lower dip. And now it looks poised at a kind of a neckline. Do you think that uranium has the stones to keep blasting higher, or how are you looking at uranium equities?
Bullishly as well. I do think there is something to the cup and handle formation we had both in, if you were looking at ETFs, both in URA as well as uranium miners, URNM. We had the breakout early in the year above those highs from a couple years ago. We pulled back, tested those levels a couple months ago. Have both ETFs have responded brilliantly off of that test. Now at least URA is back up testing the highs that we saw earlier in the year, and I think that's poised for a potential breakout and the start of another new up leg there. So the uranium space looks extremely good to us, and especially after recovering some of those key pivot levels in the short term. But also, you could say storing up some energy over that consolidation period following that early year spike. And again, that consolidation does store up energy. So when we do break out, those breakouts can be more sustainable and give more potential upside once we do finally break out.
All right, let's stick in the energy sector, but talk about oil now. Oil has been very much range-bound for well over a year now, topping out. It reached up to $95, but most of the peaks have been in the mid to high 80s and the lows down in the mid to high 60s. Right now, oil's creeping back towards that $80 a barrel level. But again, it's been choppy here. Are you seeing any direction in any of the charts when you look at the oil price?
Not really. I'm seeing the same thing you're seeing. It's pretty much been range bound, going side to side. It's hard to get too aggressive either way, have too much confidence either way. So we've been pretty much out of the energy space in terms of the commodity itself. In terms of the equities, we think there is still good potential there for further upside in some of the energy ETFs, whether it's the Spider ETF XLE or something like the Global Energy ETF IXC, which both of which recently broke out, have pulled back close to a test of that breakout level, and we would be certainly looking to add further exposure in both those names.
Well, Dana, when we're talking about energy, I've got to ask you about Nat Gas, the Widowmaker. It's finally had a bump higher, and everybody's gotten excited again. This happens to Nat Gas investors every time, but it does look encouraging. How are you looking at Nat Gas?
Try not to look at it. Like you said, they don't call it the Widowmaker for no reason. It's a tough trade for a lot of people. It's been a tough trade for me throughout the decade. So I generally, unless I see an extremely compelling setup, generally stay away from it. So this short-term move is much too short-term of a start for me to get too excited about. And So I'm trying not to look at it unless you bring it up. So it's got some work to do before I get my antenna up there.
All right, Dana, thanks for going around the horn. A lot of different commodities we covered there. I do want to talk about the U.S. equity markets, though, because, look, those went through a little bit of weakness, but quite frankly, they're back almost at all-time highs, less than a percent off all-time highs, and it just seems like for the last pretty much 6 months, even longer than that, the dips have been relatively shallow and short-lived and bought back quite quickly. What's your outlook for the broad averages?
Yeah, you're right. They've been very resilient. Our risk model did turn negative maybe a month ago or so. So we've been fairly defensive in this environment and getting more defensive into the rallies. But the bounce has continued, I would say. There's still a couple red flags out there in addition to the fact that our indicators are not unanimously back in a bullish camp, which is first and foremost on our list when deciding how to allocate our funds. We also have some of the broad averages, value line, even the equal weight, still dealing with some resistance on the chart well below the former highs. So we do have some areas of concern that we might not be out of the woods yet. There might be some more downside testing. On the other hand, as we've talked about over the last month or so, since maybe a month and a half since this correction started, we did not going in think that this correction would be would signify that the top is in. We thought the signals leading up to it suggested that the ultimate top is still ahead of us at some point, and certainly the recent action has done nothing to dispel that theory or that thinking. We've had some positive developments over the last week or so, including the advanced decline line getting close to new all-time highs. You've had the large cap averages really breaking some key pivot resistance a couple days ago. And then you have the action in the volatility indices, which after a short-term uptrend and spike up in which it held some key pivot levels and kept bouncing off there, those levels have been broken and pretty much opens the way to the downside, further downside in the volatility indices, which for us at this point is probably a positive development in terms of potential for stock prices going forward. So like I said, I'm not sure that we're out of the woods in terms of some near-term testing here lower. But again, we do the signs do point towards the ultimate top being ahead of us still.
Well, Dana, if the ultimate top is still in front of investors, even if there is some short-term weakness and you still have a somewhat defensive posture, could you contrast how you think some of the small caps will do, or will they finally play catch up to the larger caps? Just contrast the smaller companies that maybe don't get as much airtime versus the large cap mega giants that get most of the press.
Yeah, well, good question. At this part of the corrective process is a good time to start looking for potential leaders in the next wave higher. One thing we like to look for is, are those areas that have responded the best in the recent bounce? Which areas are back close to or even hitting new highs? Those are likely to be the relative strength leaders in that next leg up, more sustainable leg up in the intermediate term. So right now, that would not be the small caps, at least domestically. We're seeing leadership once again emerge in the mega caps, which if you look at the ETF XLG, it's back up testing or maybe today even hitting new all-time highs. So those funds, those equity areas that have bounced back the quickest and have retraced their recent corrective waves the fastest are those areas that are poised to lead the way higher once we do have that next sustainable bounce. So those are the areas of the market that we're looking at, including, you know, the big caps, the mega caps, a lot of international areas. Even Europe has responded well. India, we still like a lot in Japan. And in fact, one of the small cap India funds right now is dipping today, but just coming off a new all-time high. So that SMIN would be the ticker symbol. That looks like a buy right here. So I would say internationally, you're seeing some good signs. Domestically, the large caps look poised to lead the way higher again.
So can you make the argument, though, that leadership at least has somewhat shifted a little bit to commodities? Is it possible for commodity sectors to take over leadership of the markets?
In terms of commodity or resource-based equity, sure. That would, if you're just confining yourself to the equity space, leadership among those resource companies or commodity-based companies certainly would be something that we're looking at. The miners, like we talked about, have been extremely resilient and starting, even on a longer-term base, have really started to pop up on our screens for relative strength, even just within the equity market. So I think that is one area that certainly has our antenna up right now, as well as a good portion of our long allocation, our portfolio. So that is certainly, it's a good question. It's certainly an area that is, like I mentioned, popping up on our relative strength screens.
Well, Dana, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about bonds and the interest rate market. A lot of investors still hedging part of their portfolios with bond exposure. How are you looking at the bond trade?
The same as we have for the last couple months, I guess. As you know, long-term, extremely bearish on bonds. I think we're going up for in bond yields for the next couple decades. In terms of near-term, how are we playing? And we're actually long a little bit in the 10 and 30-year right now. I'd say a key spot to watch on the 10-year is about 440. We break down decisively below there. I think the short-term, that opens up further short-term downside. The big, the giant kind of line in the sand to watch, so is around that 4% level. If we hold above there, then certainly a benefit of doubt is to the upside, as we do think, again, the longer-term, we're going up for many years or decades to come. But if we can break down decisively below that 4% level, I think there could be another wave down lower before the ultimate low is in place and yield. So right now, kind of in a range, we do have a little bit of short-term bullish bias. So right now we do have some long exposure on, but that's more or less a trading exposure. As I mentioned, long-term, very bearish on the prospects for the U.S. bond market.
All right, Dana, thank you so much. I really do appreciate and respect so much the way that you look at these markets and you sharing what your models, what you're seeing in the charts. It means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to our listeners. So again, thank you very much. You can follow along with Dana at the Lion's Share Pro website. And we chat with Dana about every 2 weeks. So more for us to talk about in the next couple of weeks. But as of right now, man, oh man, a lot of markets doing well. Ride that wave higher. Momentum can be your friend. Dana, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're switching our focus to the energy sector, mostly oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes Eye on Energy, which is a free newsletter that covers simply the fundamentals, the data that is released on a very regular basis for the oil and natural gas markets. Joseph, let's start off with natural gas, because out of the two, I think it's been a little bit more interesting seeing the rise back above $2. Now, again, this isn't screaming higher by any means and hasn't broken out anywhere to 52-week highs, but at least it's out of that $1.50-plus range that it broke down to start this year. A lot of focus has been on inventory, storage numbers for natural gas. We recently got some reports this week. Joseph, are the storage numbers, the decrease in storage numbers, are they actually driving this rise in prices?
Yeah, Corey, it's good to be with you again. The big thing for natural gas is we've had high storage because we had a moderate winter and the industry had filled capacity last year. And so during most of, the first 4 or 5 months of the year, people were looking at the comparisons and saying storage is too big. We had a moderate winter and prices were sloppy. Prices are improving now for a couple of reasons. Number one, we've got the U.S. LNG export business picking up. There was a Freeport plant that was out. It's now back on. That's a couple BCF. And so that's really helping on the demand side. And then on the supply side, we've seen the lack of capital spending by companies, the discipline they've shown where they've cut back spending when they can't make money. And the data that came out from the EIA was that in December of 2023, that was the highest production ever at 105.5 BCF a day. The data that came out for the month of April was 95.5. So it shows you how depletion kicks in with lack of drilling. And we're now seeing reports that at the end of May, we may be 93 BCF. And there's forecasts that by the end of June, it would be 91 BCF if prices do not get over $3. So today we're looking at up 11 cents to 229 for NYMEX. And that's because the injection number today of 79 BCF was below what the market was expecting. So we're beginning to see that the injection comparisons are not negative and that the discipline of the industry is kicking in. And of course, when we head into the summer electricity season for air conditioning, I expect we may even see, instead of injections, we may see withdrawals because of electricity demand picking up from everything from air conditioning to, of course, everything we're seeing with technology and the AI world and all of the demand that's coming from the big systems there. So I think that the story is intact. I've been bullish on natural gas, as you know. Natural gas stocks have done quite well. You know, we talked last month about Paramount. It's up, over 25%. We've had others that are up 15, 20% since the last time we talked. And there's still a lot of bargains in the natural gas sector. The oil sector has really had the good run because of the run on to $88, the war premium, because everybody was concerned about Iran and Israel going at it. With that, cooling off, we've seen the price of crude oil come off. We're $79 today, so down from $88. Based on the fundamentals, I think we can go below $75 in the next few weeks. And I'll walk you through the reason why is we're seeing storage rising in the United States. We saw gasoline supplies go up 900,000. They're up 8 million barrels from a year ago. We've seen distillate fuels go up by 600,000. They're up 10 million barrels from a year ago. And total storage is up 9.9 million barrels from a year ago. So we're seeing those injections. The number that everybody was looking at, which was favorable to the bullish case, was that commercial stocks fell 1.4 million. But the reason was that the refiners, the activity level picked up, and the refiners were up 1% to 88.5 from 87.5. So they created more gasoline and more distillates, but also exports went up. So if you have exports up by 550,000 barrels on the week, that's, 3.7, 3.8 million barrels. So if you didn't have that increase, you would have probably had a 2 million barrel or more increase in the supplies or inventories. So that's why you saw the price of oil back off. And I think that if we continue to get reports like this over the coming weeks and there's no big increase in exports, we're going to see inventory builds that will take the price below 75. One more point to make, though, is I still believe there's quite a bit of war premium in there because of the Hamas Israel situation. If there is a, you know, success to come up with a resolution there and a ceasefire and release of hostages and both sides de-escalate, then the war premium that's there, which could be $5 to $8, some of that could get eroded. And that's why I'm saying I think 75 is something we'll see before the end of May. And I think it's possible if there is a, you know, a treaty or a resolution and it's implemented and the escalation is gone and food can get into to the poor people in Gaza that are suffering, then I think we could see some of that war premium dissipate. And that could bring the price of oil in the short term down below 70. But once we get into that driving season in July, we're back to these kinds of levels or higher. And I expect we'll be looking at $90 oil sometime during Q4, simply because demand will pick up. And if OPEC keeps to the discipline, then we're going to see supplies tighten up and demand pick up. And that's going to turn the game on again. And then I think 2025, even better prices for both commodities.
All right, Joseph, appreciate that breakdown. So it sounds like an interesting bifurcation in the energy space in that we see oil prices pulling back and you expect them to possibly even pull back further while nat gas finally gets out of the hurt locker and starts going up. So from an investment angle, do you think that if the oil prices slide, that's going to pull down all of the energy stocks, the oil and nat gas stocks together, or could the nat gas stocks diverge from the oil stocks for a temporary period while we're in the seasonally slow period in the energy space before the summer driving season and summer air conditioning season kick in?
Well, you know, if the market is coming down and oil is coming down, it usually takes all the victims, you know, energy, you know, both the oil, natural gas, the service sector, the pipelines infrastructure area. So I think that, you know, they will go down less than that, the oil side, which had the great run from February because of the rise in the price of oil from under 70 to 88. But if some of these stocks come down 5-10%, they're cheap now, but they'll get a little bit cheaper. And again, I would recommend that people take advantage of the bargains. We have a section in our reports that we call Topics Now, and we break it down by the five groups: pipeline infrastructure, domestic oil, domestic natural gas, international E&P, and energy service. And we have sometimes one or two of those that we don't have a top pick because the stocks aren't cheap enough. This issue that came out today for our clients, we covered everything with a buy, with one buy, except for pipeline and infrastructure, because those stocks haven't backed off to the degree that they probably will in the next few weeks, if I'm right about this correction.
So just to throw a little curveball in here, Joseph, we talk so much about North American producers, but it's a big world out there. There is oil, natural gas producers all around the world. What do you consider when you do look outside of just the North American borders? And do you see any opportunity outside North America?
Well, you want to go where the geology and the basins are doing well. And so, you know, we've seen Colombia do well. So one of my picks that we've talked about, you know, in previous months was Gran Tierra. Well, it's reached a new high for the cycle, right, you know, in the last little while. And so we also like, you know, companies that are in that basin in the, you know, in that northern South America. Trinidad is another one that's very attractive. We have Touchstone there, which is making an acquisition to Trinity, which I'll talk about in the conference call, the webinar tonight, and walk people through it. But they've had very good success drilling for natural gas. And there's a great trend there. Of course, Guyana being the winner of all of them. You know, you've got ExxonMobil fighting over the ownership of Hess's position. So we think that there's lots of opportunity there. We've been a big fan of Thailand with Valeura. They've done a great job with that acquisition and showing people that they can replace the decline rate and that there's exploration potential and development opportunities to grow the production. That stock has been a double over, you know, this year. And it's been one of the darlings for the street on the exploration and drilling bit side. And I'm trying to look for other companies in North Africa, but I can't find anything that I like right now. And in other cycles, I've been a big fan of what goes on in the UK offshore. But again, there's nothing that I can see right now. So I continue to look for basins that are attractive and Canadian companies that are working internationally. And if I find them, then I'm willing to go and see the companies. And then if their size is sufficient, potentially covering them on a research basis and having them come to our conference to raise the flag with our clients and subscribers that show up at the conference.
Well, Joseph, let's also circle back to the natural gas stocks again, just because there's a lot of interest. We get a lot of emails from people excited about the natural gas liftoff here. That always happens. They don't call it the widowmaker for nothing. There's people that get overly extended and then watch it crash. And then when it goes up, it can really go up in a big way. We were talking before the call about some of the hedging that some of the companies are doing. And it's from one standpoint, it's a savvy business idea to hedge some of your production, especially at higher prices. But then it also clips off some of the gains if nat gas is to really run. Maybe speak to us about the nuances around the hedging of the natural gas companies and where you see some of the best opportunities.
Yeah, a lot of the companies, they see the $1.50, $1.60 range that the price is now. But looking into the end of this year and all of 2025, you can hedge now between $3.10 and $3.20 a portion of your production. So companies that want to protect their balance sheet, want to make sure they have enough money for their CapEx. Some of them have dividends and they want to make sure their dividends are protected. They'll lock in 25 to 40% of their production north of $3, and that'll give them the cash flow they need. And then they still have room on the upside for, if there's spikes of $5 or $6 during the winter time, or if there's any disruption in supply. So I'm in the camp that, the natural gas stocks relative to the oil stocks are cheap, period. And that if I'm right, that things tighten up and we have a multi-year, not one of these, jerky moves where you get 2-3 good months and then 2-3 bad months, and it's more of a trader's market. I think we're looking at a sustainable multi-year bull market simply because we will have an LNG market, export market, starting in late this year, early next year, with LNG Canada coming on. And if other projects get the FID, final investment decision, with a go, then between now and the end of this decade, we may end up with 5, 6, 7 BCF of exports. The first LNG Canada is 2.1. They're talking about doubling that with a second train. We have the Enbridge backed projects, Pembina backed projects. You've got the producers behind one of the projects. And so I think the opportunity in natural gas is going to be so strong that the set of these stocks trading at 2 and 3 times cash flow, they'll go back to 5 to 7 times cash flow. And some of them are trading at 20, 30 cents versus their NAV. They will move up to where the value of their NAV is, which is what we've seen in historic bull markets. When you get near the last phase, companies trade around their NAV.
So if we are in for this sort of a bull market, which sectors of the natural gas stocks do you think perform the best? What have you seen in history?
Well, historically, it's the companies that, number one, have growth. So they have, they own their own facility. So they're a low-cost producer. And then potentially, if they're a small or medium-sized company, they could be taken over in the cycle by larger companies. But that doesn't even mean that larger companies can't be taken over. If you take Mike Rose's companies, he had Berkeley, got taken over by a monster American company. He had Duvernay bought out by Shell. So even his company, which is 600,000 BOEs a day now, potentially could be taken over. So I'm looking at things like Crew, which is in Northeast BC, which I think could be taken over. There's other companies like Petrus that's cheap. Pinecliff is cheap. Birchcliff is very cheap. You can go through. There's a large number of companies that potentially in this cycle could get taken over, if the right bid comes in and management supports it. So, I think that, with that capital gains tax going up over a quarter of $1 million, it's not going to make deals happen quickly, because I think companies will say, well, I don't want to have, the buyer, the sellers are not going to want to pay more tax. So let's hope there's a change in government in Ottawa. I'll get off my high horse now on that.
Well, Joseph, just thinking about M&A, there's been a lot in the energy space. But if we pivot back over to the oily names, Do you think if we see this pullback in oil price, like maybe it gets down to 75, sub 75 into the 60s again, do you think that cashed up larger companies would take the advantage of they've had a nice share price move and use their equity to acquire smaller growth companies? Or do you think they have enough cash built up where they would risk making an acquisition to bolt on more production? Could we see more M&A in a pullback scenario?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen that in the past where companies that do have some debt problems or management is getting, older and don't want the headaches and hassles anymore, the regulatory environment. You know, there's all kinds of reasons for the sellers to say, I'm willing to sell now. And in one of the conference calls I was in this morning, one of the smaller companies, 10,000 BOE day type, was saying they continue to look at M&A opportunities. They've got a strong balance sheet. And they're looking for tuck under acquisitions that fit in their core area. So I'm optimistic that there's going to be more deals. But right now, the difference between the bid and the ask is too wide. But if something happens and the prices go down in oil, and there's any concern by the sellers or potential sellers that maybe they should do a deal, then there might be more activity. But I think that, you know, historically, we've seen more deals happen when the market is zooming, because companies look at it and say, okay, what is cheaper, to buy something on Bay Street or to spend the money drilling? And sometimes the benefit comes out with the buy, because the contiguous land, you know, operational efficiencies, all those kind of tax pools are becoming more important. So if you look at Tourmaline's purchase of Bonavista, not only was it to get the land and the production, but it was also to increase their tax pools to push their tax horizon out.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting about some of these corporate moves, too. You do need to take into account the tax accounting considerations. But, you know, to your point, there's a lot of companies, most of them now, that have cleaned up their balance sheet that are paying nice dividends as well, returning capital to shareholders. Do you see any changes in terms of the yields that these companies offer if the oil price falls, if the natural gas price goes up? Any changes that investors should be aware of on the dividend front?
Well, we're seeing some companies that have, you know, impeccable balance sheets. So, you know, companies like Paramount Resources that was paying 12.5 cents a month, you know, and now they're paying 15 cents a month, so $1.80 dividend. And this was a stock that traded under $2 in 2020. So you're now getting the dividend is equal to how low the stock price was during the crazy market in 2020. But I'll just read off some of the yields from our May 2nd run that we did. Birchcliff yielding 7.2%. You've got Tourmaline Oil. That's a low one. You've got Paramount yielding 5.6 with the new dividend. Pinecliff 6.1. You've got Surge 6.7, you've got Hemisphere 6.0, InPlay 7.6, Petrus 9.0. So there's some very nice dividends out there. Petrus, this case, it's a monthly dividend. Balance sheet's in good shape. So you've got to do your homework. You've got to look at the balance sheets. You've got to look at the management. You've got to look at the insider ownership. All those things are things we cover in our report, and the report that we just released today had our review of the insider trading. And, you know, what to us was we found some companies did have insider selling, which surprised me. But in a lot of cases, you know, in the natural gas side more, we saw insider buying. But in the oil side, we saw insider selling.
Well, let's also take a look at the energy services side of it. You mentioned that some of the pipeline and infrastructure companies were holding up better. Maybe they won't pull back as much. Are you seeing any opportunities in the energy services side of the business?
Yeah, the frackers have been quite cheap, and some of the drillers are as well. So let's start with the frackers. You've got Trican, you know, which was a $5.30 stock. It's up 15 cents today to $4.24. STEP had a fabulous report, and They reported yesterday, and they had a conference call this morning that I attended. The stock's up 5.5% today because of that. And then CES, which is the fluids for drilling and completions, that stock's up 6.8% to 640, which is a new all-time high for the stock, or a new 52-week high. So you've got some very good responses to these companies that are reporting. One of the ones that I think is quite cheap is Ensign, Murray Edwards company, which is a driller. And the drilling industry is going to be much more active in Q4 and also 2025 because of all the activity we're going to see in Northeast BC. So I think that, you know, people should be looking at those kinds of names.
Joseph, how do you do due diligence on these service companies? What are some of the key financial metrics, some of the key just company nuances to pay attention to that can help you separate maybe the more opportune type of service companies in terms of investments?
Yeah, the first thing I look at is the balance sheet. I want the balance sheet to be strong enough that they can grow and that the companies they work with won't be pressuring them on rates because they know that they don't have balance sheet issues, so that they can knock the day rates down. Second is insider ownership. I want the company's management to have their net worth on the line so that they're acting as owners rather than bureaucrats who are taking a big salary, bonuses, and all the rest. And then three, where are they working? Are they in the right basin? So if you're a driller, you want to be, of course, big in the Montney and Duvernay. And also, of course, with the activity picking up and drilling for heavy oil, which isn't as much of a frack business there, you know, as a driller, you want to be active in that basin too. So, you want to find the right niches and you want to be able to stay on the pads longer. Because if you can be working as a fracker 20, 22 hours a day, with, you know, multiple crews, then the logistics and the productivity, are very good. Step announced this morning that utilization in Q1 was 83% in Canada because they had one contract where they were on the well site with multiple, because of the pads that were in pad drilling, 63 days. Well, the efficiencies, if you're working 22 hours a day with 63 days in a row, that's very, very productive. And that's why you can have the superb profits that Step reported yesterday and they had their conference call this morning.
So then, Joseph, one step back, taking a look at the equities, both oil and natural gas equities. How right now do you gauge investor sentiment? And have you seen new investors, generalists entering the market? What's your gauge on that?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of generalist interest. The BMO CAP conference in Toronto, the companies I've talked to said there was very good audience, people they hadn't seen in years who hated oil. Now they're coming to the meetings. They're having one-on-ones with them. The energy people who have been there for a long time and supportive, but the generalists have come back. They're now they're staying in the big caps and medium caps. But over time, companies that I've chatted with are starting to have meetings with family offices. They're finding good interest in the States, interest in Europe hemisphere. Don Simmons mentioned that to me when I talked to him earlier this week. He's going off to Europe to wave the flag because he sees, if he can get interest there and more interest, in the States, because the Canadians, they keep on knocking on the same doors. And of course, if you want new investors, you got to find new doors.
Yes, you do. But I think it's always interesting just to see kind of what the sentiment is and if there are new investors coming in, which it seems like there are, and we can see just how well some of those ETFs have done, pushing to all-time highs and continuing from there, even when oil mostly has been flat too. So very interesting, Joseph. Great having you on the show. We will post a link to the Schachter Energy Report so everyone can stay up to date with what you're covering in the energy sector. I really do appreciate you taking time with us on this weekend show. And everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and now YouTube page under The KE Report to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Everyone, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.